Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr., invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Excited to be with you. We finally had a game.
Yes.
So now I feel like, you know, before you could definitely make a comment that we're just here kind of talking about nothing. And we always had to couch everything we said with, but we really won't know until they start playing games. Well, they've now played a game, so we've lost the asterisk. We now have to kind of mean what we say a little more.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
No.
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 I like being able to wiggle out of things.
The third preseason game, Paul, is the one that means the most.
You're right. That's the one. So really, until the third preseason game, we really can't make any judgment calls.
Yeah. No, except we will. That's exactly what we're going to do today.
Yeah, we're going to make a whole lot of judgments. I know a lot of people have been asking, been waiting, and we wanted to kind of break it down to really dive in the run up here. So today, we're going to run through the offensive roster outlook. We're going to take a look at where the cuts might come, what the decisions are right now, the conversations. I think the most important part is, what are the conversations that Duke Tobin, the other scouts, the coaches are having right now in regards to this roster? Because you can tell me, we had a conversation about this yesterday. I thought this roster is much more challenging to work than last year's. The back end has more potential. It has, because of so many draft picks.
Right.
Last year they had 7 draft picks.
Right.
And some undrafted guys they liked. This year they've got all these draft picks and some undrafted guys they like. And you throw in guys that got hurt last year that they were able to stash.
Right.
Like Billings and Jackson that pushed things back further.
Right.
All the turnover we've talked about, we're seeing it, and there's a lot of decisions to be made in the back 5 to 10,
right,
where a lot of guys are going to be left out that were previously a big part of the program.
Yeah, and this goes back to, well, not so much on offense, Paul. I think we'll see it next week when we talk defense. But the things we chatted about way back when, and it was really more centered around, I think, the running back conversation. I always go back to this because we don't really disagree like we did with the Hill mix-in and who plays and when and how much conversation we had before.
Which you're coming to my side on, by the way.
Yeah, right. But when it came down to the whole sense of urgency thing and these coaches, who, you know, are you going to really truly go with the best players? And when you mentioned potential, maybe right now they're not as refined, but you're like, okay, these guys are better, or, you know, way more talented. They just need to put some things together. And so, yeah, I think you're right. It's not only are the draft picks there, Paul, but even offensively, I think there's guys like Jeff Driscoll and Kavari Russell who they kind of carried along all last year. They were total afterthoughts. And now, you know, those guys, if you're going to count them as part of this 53, that those are guys I guess you didn't really anticipate, right? Because they were just sort of pickups a year ago that they just,
You take flyers on guys, right, and you give them a full off season to show you what they can do, and the Bills come and do on that to decide,
right,
if they've shown you enough to believe that they're better than some of the guys that you've drafted yourself or whatever, and it's a kind of a free for all. So let's do this. We've got some players that you're going to hear from as we sort of cycle through each position, but some of the conversations are interesting, and you're going to like where we start, people, because I know you love this. You love talking about trade rumors. A.J. McCarron trade rumors, of course, popped up last week with lots of irrelevant feces being thrown, yeah, against a wall in Denver, and that's making the internet react. And
right.
So
leaks. 7-8 teams.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. So let's start with quarterbacks. And normally, you know, in previous years, before last year, basically, this had been a pretty easy conversation, yeah, that would last, about 10 seconds.
Right.
Dalton McCarron next.
Yeah.
It is not that easy now, and partially due to, well, mostly due to Jeff Driskel's presence, right, here. So the Bengals kept three quarterbacks all last year, and they had not done that since the rule changed. And it does. They had, this is exactly the conversation we just started with. They had the luxury last year,
right,
because they only had so many draft picks. They kind of were able to go find a few guys to fill out the back that were draft picks.
Right.
Driskel was a draft pick that was let go by San Francisco that they were able to take a flyer on. Same thing with Kavari Russell. But in this case, with Driskel, you know, the roster is different this year, where the luxury of three quarterbacks is, I think, lost because of draft-heavy positions like receiver, and you've got battles at defensive line, and a lot of guys that you have spent a lot of draft picks that you don't want to cut.
Right.
Can you afford to really keep three quarterbacks again? I don't know if you can.
Yeah, you're right, Paul. I mean, because basically a third quarterback means one less D lineman. Essentially, you know, or one less linebacker. So it's not really an apples-to-apples sort of comparison, especially on offense. Right now, as we record this, I'm firmly in the camp that they do at least have Driskel on the roster with the 53, largely because the performance against Kansas City, his first game, they were real excited to see this dude play. I mean, really, he's got, you know, training camp was his first practices with the team. He got a couple reps during the year last year. But that was it. Like, all his work was, we were about this in March, was pregame, Bill Lazor saying, drop back, throw to Jake Kumerow, who's just standing there.
Yeah.
I mean, the only, I remember writing this, the only live targets Jeff Driskel threw to in 2016 were like the receivers they brought in to kind of just run around for a workout late in the year.
Yeah.
Those were the only live guys he threw to who were running routes.
Right.
So, you know.
And then you get to camp, and he's taking the one or two reps at the end of every session.
Right.
It's not like he's out there getting lots of run.
No.
He's getting third-string quarterback reps because they got to get Dalton and McCarron ready. And so until this game, this second half of this game against, yeah, Tampa Bay, they didn't really know what they had.
Right.
And I think they're learning a little bit. And you saw two touchdown drives back-to-back. You saw him work his legs, but he also made some nice throws, was in control of the huddle. And you can say whatever you want to, and it's true, about the second halves of these preseason, right, games are full of guys that are going to be working at used car lots sooner than later. Particularly those first couple drives, to do it there and to be as, right, effective as he was, I think it opened eyes. And it just brings up this question. It is a conversation that I think everyone in those offices is definitely having and has been having for a while, but it really needs to be having right now. Look yourself in the mirror. Can we afford to keep three quarterbacks? And if we can't, is Driskel good enough to be a backup? Because if you think he is, you should be trading A.J. McCarron.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I say right now, Paul, it's three QBs. I don't think they changed their price on A.J. McCarron because, honestly, while they may like Jeff Driskel as a prospect, I don't know if Andy Dalton got hurt against Kansas City that they'd feel real good about Jeff Driskel being their guy, you know, to try to get this team to the playoffs. So I think that's a real consideration as well. These next few, so right now, I think Driskel's on the 53 because you did it all last year when you didn't know what you had, and now you might actually like what you have. So how that makes no sense to me. Like, oh, now we really think he's
no, but
good.
The roster's changed.
Yeah, well,
the rest of the roster is different because now, before when you kept Jeff Driskel, you kept Jeff Driskel because you didn't have any
Andrew
better
Billings
options
was on IR, right?
Because you had because you look, yeah. You were, who are you comparing him to?
Right.
Who? Nobody.
Yeah.
Now you're comparing him to Alex Erickson or to one of your drafted defensive linemen or whoever down there or somebody. Maybe even an actual draft pick that you're saying, are we going to keep a draft pick or are we going to get rid of a third quarterback guy who we took a flyer on?
Yeah.
Who was a sixth round pick?
No, that's a real. Well,
I just think that's what's different.
Yeah. No, you're right. But I think the difference there is offense to offense. I think Mason Schreck, his issues as the last of 11 picks. He seems destined to practice squad to me. I think CJ Uzama's ankle is going to put him on IR. So I think they're going to kind of justify some things there offensively. Now that we're recording this, Paul, I think what they should do is push Jeff Driskel and see if he can run the Bengals offense that they know Andy Dalton and AJ McCarron.
Absolutely.
I'm not convinced that this dude can throw 25-yard seam routes. I'm not convinced he can accurately throw go routes. I mean, Ken Zampezi, I think, played into his strengths against Tampa with some option and using his legs and some boots and getting him in space and on the run, which is great. And that's great that he can do that.
And if he was playing, he would do that.
Right. But I think he's struggled in camp, to be honest, when it's come down to stick the ball in here.
Yeah.
Or throw it, okay, here's the corner, here's the boundary, throw it to the receiver, the ball goes out of bounds. So I think, okay, you saw that, that's intriguing, push it. Because you know what Andy and AJ can do. So let's, if they really want to keep this, so in 3 weeks when we do the full 53, for me to stay on this train, I think I want to see him run offense, not option offense and whatever. I want to see him run what they do.
And what I think will be interesting for fans to watch as they run through these next two preseason games, just the next two, and the third one will be a back-of-the-roster crapshoot. The next two, do the Bengals give Driskel a chance to go out there and do that with the one line?
Right.
And not just be stuck in the back half playing with the scrubs. Do they even maybe bring him in before McCarron or shorten what would traditionally be McCarron's playing time,
right,
to get Driskel some love.
I think
love.
They should.
Maybe rotate the two.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard, you know, obviously you're always going to hear Marvin Lewis use the word competition, but we've heard him say Jeff Driskel is fighting for the second quarterback spot. He said that on the record in a press conference.
Right.
Now, of course he's going to say that because everyone's fighting for a spot somewhere. That's fine. An opportunity for an opportunity, right?
Right.
But I do think that's real, and you don't give it lip service. Back it up.
Yeah.
Let Jeff Driskel go. And if they do that, we know that this conversation is real. And at that point that you can say, okay, maybe they are going to be not that they change. Maybe they do change their price a little bit. They're willing to back off a little bit because they feel like what's the biggest concern? They've always said, we don't want to trade AJ McCarron and be the same place that the other team that we're trading him to is, is it, you know, that was the deal with Minnesota last year. We don't want to suddenly be where if Andy Dalton is the next Teddy Bridgewater, we're sitting there, you know, holding our pants. So it's like, if they feel, and that's really what this comes down to.
Yeah.
Jeff Driskel needs to prove to them that he can be a good enough guy that he could go out and win him a few games the same way they feel about AJ McCarron. And if that's the case, and you can go out and get a two, or whatever is on there, which depends on the rest of the league.
Yeah,
I would consider it because then it frees up. You're keeping another guy on your roster that maybe you'd be nervous about getting rid of.
Right.
So it's gonna be an interesting conversation. So watch the rotations the next two games to see when Jeff Driskel comes in, when AJ McCarron comes out, how that compares to previous years. All right, let's move into receivers. The other really interesting group, yeah, and one we've been kind of been talking about for a while and eyeing. You've got A.J. Green and Brandon LaFell as your starters. Tyler Boyd is your starter in the slot. John Ross, first-round draft pick, made his first appearance in 11-on-11 on Monday. So they're starting to ramp him up. We may or may not see him in the Washington game, I would think. But at the very least, he looks like he's going to be playing in the opener against Baltimore. You've got Josh Malone, who ain't going nowhere. He's actually played pretty well. Right. He played well in the opener, had a touchdown. He played well in the scrimmage. You have Cody Core, who's now on crutches. But he's shown enough. I don't think that he would be going anywhere. Although I don't have him in the lock category yet. I don't think he's shown enough there. And then you have Alex Erickson.
Right.
Bengals have kept six receivers every year except for two since 2004.
Right. Yeah.
And they kept seven in 2012 and 13, which was right after they had drafted Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu. Right. They had put a little extra draft picks in, and they wanted to hold on and make sure they hold on to that room. Similar situation here.
Right.
John Ross, Josh Malone fit that bill, and so maybe they're keeping seven this year. We know what Alex Erickson did. I think seven is what's happening.
Yeah, I think largely because John Ross, they're being so cautious with him. You know, I think if he was, let's just say he didn't have the labrum surgery, he was just a first-round pick coming in, and he had a full camp and all that stuff, I think Alex Erickson is out the door. But I do think seven makes sense to me. For all of the reasons you said, the only change that I see is if Cody Core just can't get healthy. It's an ankle. I mean, he's dealt with kind of leg stuff his whole, you know, all last year was, well, cramping usually. This year he kind of dinged a knee in OTAs and was okay, and now it's an ankle. So we'll see. I mean, ankles are tricky. You know, I do think they like him. I agree. I think seven is where we're at. I think, Paul, the only thing that could change maybe is if Ross really, you mentioned him getting ramped up, if he somehow is ready to play by that third preseason game and you feel real good about him sort of filling in a slot. Because that's all Alex Erickson can do on offense is be a slot guy. Well, really, if things go bad, Brandon LaFell can play inside. And John Ross can go outside, or Tyler Boyd can go outside, and Brandon LaFell can go. So, I mean, his spot on the offense is real tenuous, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think really he's around because Adams suspended, and John can't really field punts. And do you want Tyler Boyd back? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So his set, like he's a tenuous seven to me.
He is a tenuous seven. The question would be, is he let me loft this out here and shoot this down if you want to. Isn't Josh Malone Cody Core? I mean, aren't they the same guy, except Josh Malone was drafted two rounds earlier, and
they are very
has
similar.
Shown well. They're similar players. And I just wasn't sold on Cody Core what we saw last year. He made some plays, and he's big and he's fast, and he's all those raw things. But isn't that what Josh Malone is? And when you're looking at what your a receiving contingent looks like, I'm looking at two of the same guy.
Yeah.
Don't you have to kind of make a choice? And I think they have they wouldn't have drafted him.
Right.
I don't know. And so at that point, Would you keep Erickson and get rid of Cody Core, or try to stash Cody Core? Obviously, they try to stash Cody Core in the practice squad. Right. Hope no one picked him up and try to stash him on the PS.
Yeah.
In that scenario.
Yeah, I can't shoot that down. I think why to me Cody Core's on this roster currently is when you look at that's a Darren Simmons thing to me. We've heard Marvin Lewis and James Urban, his position coach, rave about Cody's development. We've heard A.J. Green rave about it. That's all well and good. But if you're going to talk about the 46, I don't know if Josh Malone can run down and cover. I think Darren Simmons liked Cody Core as a gunner and actually participating in that stuff. That was a strength of his last year. That was one of the reasons he was active early at times. So I think, to me, and that's kind of why Alex Harrison is going to be there too. Like, his real value right now is on special teams. So I can't shoot that thought bubble down for sure. But I think as we sit, you know, if Cody Core's ready to go in Baltimore, I think that's why. Whereas Josh Malone is your inactive.
Yeah. How big of a difference is there between Cody Core as a gunner and Darquez and William Jackson or Josh Shaw? Or, I mean, the guys
I was going to say Darquez is probably going to get hurt, but Cody Core hasn't really stayed healthy.
Right. We've got a lot of guys in this roster that have consistently been hurt.
No, I get you.
I'm saying if we're, because we're talking about keeping seven receivers.
Right.
It's a big old number.
Yep.
And you're talking about, I think Alex Erickson, and this is going to be a perfect opportunity to bring in receivers coach James Urban. I think Alex Erickson gives you a more diverse things that he can do for you than Cody Core does, even him as a special teamer.
Right.
I want to do that. I want to bring in James Urban. I talked to James Urban about this exact topic last week. Part of our Five for Friday series, Alex Erickson, it was about him and his fight and his need to sort of duplicate his great preseason from a year ago. And James Urban was far more adamant than I anticipated him being about Alex Erickson.
How's he been improvement-wise in that aspect?
Alex is a great natural football player.
Yeah.
He plays all three positions that we have on any given play. I can move from one to the other yeah, without a blank. I told him the other day in the little mock game we had in the stadium, he had a false start. I said, finally, I have something to correct you on. Because it's hard, you know, other than, hey, you know, a little bit tighter here, you know, things like that. But yeah, he rarely makes a mistake. He knows how to play. Almost every day he uncovers and runs a route that is an ooh or an all route that just drops a guy in coverage. And, you know, I think he's a really good football player.
Yeah.
He's a little bit of everything, a little bit more of everything than you think.
Yeah.
He's a little bit faster, a little bit quicker, a little bit stronger, a little bit bigger, a little bit better than you think, because he looks like a choir boy.
And right.
So you don't think this kid's going to destroy you on a route, and then he does.
Yeah, he just seems like he's just got a knack for the game.
He does.
That way. It's
he does. He really does.
Which is huge if you're going to play most of your snaps inside.
Yeah.
Even though he does the foul side, I mean, that's clearly where he would spend most of his time.
Inside is where he thrives, but he certainly has an ability to uncover and has shown a knack outside, too.
What's funny, I mean, he had as good of a rookie year as maybe anybody in the entire class as far as impact on the team.
Sure.
And yet we're going to be sitting here and talk about him. Where does he fit a year later? Which is like, it's hard to believe, but just because you guys have added to the room so much.
Yeah. He fits. Alex, you know, when we added those guys, Alex says, hey, it's the NFL. What would you expect?
I mean, right.
I mean, we're fighting for our jobs every year. What do you think?
Yeah.
And that's the way he approaches it. He comes to work every day. The guy can run all day long.
Yeah.
In practice, every day, you know, he's among our top, and there's a couple others, but among our top guys on the GPS for yardages and bursts and everything, because he just practices all day long and goes hard all day.
I mean,
never complains. I mean, he's just a football player.
Yeah. It's one of those guys that you just don't want to see leave the team. You want to make sure we find a way to keep that dude here. So whenever you got a sack, like, please don't take this guy from me.
Well, you know, it's been my experience in you know, 14 years in this league that you find a way for guys who are great Swiss Army knife football players to make your team, because all it does is make you better. At some point, their versatility and toughness and ability to understand the game and go plug and play pays off for you.
So there's James Urban, and you know, he makes a point. This guy needs to be on the team. He's a football player, and he said, you know, in my 14 years, I have just seen too many times where that Swiss Army knife type of guy helps you win games.
Right.
There's no doubt he's in the best 53. At some point you're saying, is he one of the best 53 players? And he is.
Right.
Right? Isn't he? We're calling Alex Erickson the Swiss Army knife, not Cody Core.
Right.
So if you're talking about the back of a receiver room, that's what you need out of that.
Right.
Now, no one wants to cut the cord on a guy that played for you, seemed to take some steps.
Right.
And it was in the second year, entering his second year. But I would, you know, especially if Josh Malone has a good preseason, and if his preseason looks like his first game did and like his scrimmage has and like his most of his offseason has, I think it's something you start to consider.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're comparing,
sure.
If you're looking at other right. spots, like, you know, are we really going to keep extra offensive players because we're keeping two of the same at receiver?
Yeah, because right now we're sitting on 10 roster spots for quarterbacks and receivers.
That's a
but
lot.
As of right now, that's kind of where I'm.
Most years, that's eight. That has been eight. Two spots is a big deal on a roster that just drafted 11 guys.
Yeah. I think these are ones here as we record this. I have to sit, though, with that number.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we're breaking this down for real before cuts, final cuts, you know, some of that will have shaken out. Maybe not. Maybe it'll still be 10.
There's always an injury.
Right.
It is the preseason. Guys are going to get hurt. Guys are going to get stashed. They're going to talk about IR return. Right. We've already talked about what CJ Uzomah will get into. That's part of what frees a lot of this stuff up. But for right now, these are the conversations that are being had in there that I think the people are looking at with the next couple of games. All right, I got to remind everybody, 50 Fest is coming September 23rd. It's out at 50 West Brewery. Local beer, local food, local music at its best. It's a one-day event. They got three stages with all so many of the best local regional music, 80 local brews on tap, food trucks, petting zoo, goats.
Goats.
I can't guarantee goats, but probably goats.
Pandas.
Three pandas and a koala. Three pandas and a koala. Guaranteed. Yeah, we don't know that for sure. anyway, it's September 23rd at 50 West. Huge festival. Go down there, get some Doom Pedal, get some Coast to Coast, or all the rest of the local breweries are all going to be there. So go to the website, 50 West. It's FIFTY, 50westbrew.com. Every beer is a journey. Come join them for the ride. Much thanks for having them on board. We're loving having them on board. Optimistic Bobby will be here later in the podcast. He's got a different question this week. I'll give him credit. Different question this week. But still optimistic, of course. Anyway, so let's move on. Oh, everyone's favorite topic. Let's talk offensive line. So some interesting things are happening. I think we have seen distance occur in an upset. Trey Hopkins, I think, is your starting right guard.
I think so, too.
It appears that way. He's been taking all the one reps. He played well in the preseason game. He's young. He's got a lot of potential. I think they like what they've got in him.
Yeah.
And they certainly like it more than what they've seen from Andre Smith thus far.
Yeah, and Andre Smith, you know, appeared in practice late. I guess it's early in this week with a brace on his right arm. Not sure if it's an elbow thing, if it's a flare-up of the biceps from a year ago or whatever it may be, but it's sort of a visible sign that something obviously needed to be braced. And frankly, Paul, I mean, he's looked better, and I guess you'd expect this, you'd hope to expect he's looked better at right tackle when he's filled in there than he has at right guard. You know, but yeah, you're right. I think Trey Hopkins is winning that job.
Yeah,
at right guard.
Yeah, absolutely. Currently. So that's a bit of an off the radar upset from what we thought going into camp.
Yeah, they paid him almost $5 million to be that right guard.
Yeah, and now he's here, and so the role. And then I want to talk a little bit more about Trey Hopkins real quick, because I had a conversation with him after, you know. This is a guy who was an undrafted free agent, and he's just he's been hanging around. He's had injuries, but he was out there playing with the ones, playing in a game, really, as a primary starter for one of the first times, and he was let's just say he was excited after the game. I mean, you know, wide eyes, big smile, just really in a great place. After the offensive line had a pretty good night.
Yeah.
All things considered, no one's saying that they're the Cowboys right now.
Right.
But considering what we've seen to this point in camp and maybe what expectations were, I thought it was a nice foundation for them to spring forward off of. They've got to get better, but a nice foundation all around. But Trey was part of it. So here's some of my conversation with Trey Hopkins after Friday's game against the Bucs.
I mean, I know you always have confidence in yourself, but is it kind of a whirlwind that you've gone from trying to work your way up to now out there with the starters for the whole first half and playing guard? I mean, is it kind of a whirlwind right now where you're at? Or
I mean, it feels great. I mean, it's a long road. I have a lot of stuff to look back on and just, and I mean, see where it's kind of been like a fight with myself, just going from the injury and having to rehab all that and having to take the year and luckily being able to stay here on practice squad and take the time to get my body back together and learning from guys that are in front of me. It's a whirlwind, but it's a progression that I can look back on and see where everything kind of led up to this moment. And I was excited to get the opportunity to go out there and play the stars today.
It's kind of helped. I mean, Paul has made it pretty clear. It's open. Mm-hmm. Has that been pretty helpful for you through this whole process to know that the spot's right there if you want it?
It's definitely motivation. I mean, any time a spot's open, there's free competition for a spot. Everyone's gassed up for that. Everybody's excited about that. So it's just extra motivation when you come out here for practice and look up for games. You have something to prove. You have a set goal in mind for that moment.
This is a big deal tonight. I mean, you know, it's just another game. It's a preseason game, for God's sakes. But it's the first game for you guys and your kind of new group up front. Is it just another game, or was this kind of a big deal tonight?
I mean, I can't speak for everyone. For me, it definitely was a big deal. Just because, I mean, there's been so many question marks about the O-line, but I've also had question marks about myself. This is the first, game I've got to start in since my rookie season coming in. And preseason, I got a start then. I mean, so I haven't been out with the ones in 3 years now. So, I mean, it was a big moment for me. So that's how I take it.
I mean, there's a guy who's loving his opportunity, making the most of his opportunity. It clearly means a lot to him. It's exciting times for Trey Hopkins. And so what this does then, so you flood it back. Andre Smith now comes in as your backup right guard and right tackle.
Yes.
Which I think they envisioned him being a swing guy anyway, but now he's just not even starting.
Right.
He's your backup right guard and right tackle. So you have that position, those positions covered. TJ Johnson is your backup center. Yep. Can also play guard.
Yes.
Christian Westerman is your backup for Clint Bowling.
Yes.
We've seen Christian sprinkled in with the one group.
Yeah.
Some during camp where they're trying to give him some run out there.
Right.
I don't think that's questioning Clint Bowling. I think they just want to see some of the young guys. They don't need to see Clint. He's the one guy they don't need to see.
Right. And Christian was a guy who couldn't even be active over Jeff Driscoll.
It's about time he gets a little look at what he can do. So we're starting to see more of that. We saw that Clint Bowling played the first quarter against Tampa Bay, and the whole line stayed. Everybody else stayed out there for the whole first half. Westerman came in and played the second quarter, basically. So they wanted to give him a little more run up there. So he's in there. So if an injury were to happen to Cedric Ogbuehi, we've seen this a little bit in camp. Jake Fisher has moved over to left tackle. Andre Smith plug in at right tackle, and off they go. So they drafted J.J. Dielman this year, who is sort of a center prospect going forward. They got Russell Bodine going into a contract year, and who knows, you know, T.J. Johnson, who knows his future really. They probably want to keep J.J. Dielman around to see if he can develop and be a center of the future. We're naming a lot of linemen here.
Yeah.
And
that's nine.
That's nine. And there's Eric Winston still out there, who's sort of your veteran guy. And we've talked about this. You know, it's making more and more sense that he's not going to make this team.
Yeah. I mean, because we named nine guys who are all, I mean, really, Andre's the oldest of all of them, can play multiple positions, and actually has looked decent at right tackle. Which you would hope so, guard is kind of still a work in progress. But Eric Winston, I mean, he basically, Paul, Eric Winston's best day of anything happened on Friday in the game, which, you know, that's important. I thought, you know, we didn't see 73 rolling around on the ground as much as we do in practice and stuff. And I just, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I understood why they signed him and brought him back, and we can roll with the locker room leader stuff, but that only goes to a certain point. I mean, I honestly don't know if you have room for a third-string tackle who can't really – I mean, he can't handle Jordan Willis. He can't handle Carl Lawson. And these are kids who don't know what they're doing. So I just, you know, I just don't see – I think he's the odd man out when it comes to this group, because the rest of everybody else are undrafted free agents that, you know, can be a practice squad
guy. And scroll back to what we just talked about. Guys that can help you. Would you rather have Alex Erickson? Would you rather have development of Jeff Driscoll? Or would you rather have Eric Winston? There's no future in Eric Winston.
Right. I don't know how much he can help you if he had.
I don't know how much there's a present. Yeah. In Eric Winston. So, you know, the back end of this roster is about guys that can help you certainly going forward. I mean, Duke Tobin picks the last seven.
Yeah.
Marvin gets the first 46. He gets his guys for game day. The back seven is about this roster and the health of it going forward. And no one would say the health of it going forward is relying on keeping Eric Winston around.
Right.
Especially with the development of Trey Hopkins, you have more flexibility and security amongst the reserves,
right,
with Andre Smith. So because what would Eric Winston be doing? He would be your third string
tackles
only.
Right tackle only,
right? And you have backups at guard.
Yeah. And I mean, look, if we're going to talk doomsday scenario where you got all these dudes getting hurt, first of all, there's a waiver wire situation happening, but Dielman's really your only — Dielman and Russell Bodine are your only one position guys. I mean, well, I guess you can argue Cedric Oboye he is now, too. you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, Trey Hopkins can play, could get you by at tackle. I hate to say that, but you know what I mean? It's just, he's been out there. Andre Smith can play multiple positions. TJ Johnson can play multiple. I guess Christian Westerman can play both guard spots at least. And, you know, again, worst case scenario, can snap a ball. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just, you know, you're talking about, yeah, you're right. I mean, J.J. Dielman would be a 16-game inactive.
Yep.
In that back seven.
Absolutely. And you know, it.
So, you know,
it's hard to rationalize. Yeah. It's hard to rationalize finding a way, because you just have so many other options.
Right.
And if you're going to go heavy at, to be honest, QB or receiver, not
right.
And.
Right.
One of those two. You have to cut the fat somewhere, yeah. And you know, a guy who's at the in on the putting out on 18 in his career, yeah, is where you're going to go, and he's looked like a guy where it's over,
yeah,
in camp. He has. It's unfortunate. You know, we talk about this a lot. Nice guy, good, yeah, guy. Obviously, you know, NFLPA prez,
right?
Super smart. He's going to be fine. But I don't know if football's what he's still got in him.
Yeah.
So you're right. So I think that's one that you can look at an offensive line. And but again, injuries certainly happen on offensive line. They seem to happen a lot to this offensive,
right,
line. So nothing is for certain that,
right,
that anybody is gone, because we could see any one of these guys go down and it shuffles the whole thing back,
yeah,
up. So keep that in mind. You had, you know, this is a little bit of teaser promo.
Yeah.
For our special section, of course, we do this every year. We do our season preview section. That's going to be coming out on the Sunday before the season starts, so September 3rd. It'll be out in newsstands, but you'll see it online before that, all of our season preview content. A big part of it this year, obviously, you can't have a season preview and not talk about this offensive line, particularly Jake Fisher and Cedric Oboye.
Right.
You had a sit-down with them recently, and, you know, they're not the most loquacious guys.
Yeah, not quite wit status.
No. But I think they said some interesting stuff, and you know, you can expound a little bit more on that and set that up.
Yeah, I think I don't know how often these guys have made our BBP, Paul. I mean, just
not
frankly,
often.
Cause I And I'll be honest, I don't know how much they ever made television because they're just not that great in front of camera. So, yeah, I think Sed, and look, I think Sed, especially Paul, is well aware of the eyes on him, the pressure on him. Jake gets it too. He's just more itchy to play, finally, in one spot. So they're kind of in different areas, but they know, you know, there's a reason I want to sit down with them.
Yeah.
There's a reason all this. So, yeah, let's hear from Jake and Sed. Just, I think people, look, again, they're not wit, but I thought they were interesting.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of interesting because a couple years ago, you know, they'll always come back to you guys coming in together, and that was the plan, right? I mean, I don't know if they explicitly said it, but kind of what it was, like 2017 would be the year you guys kind of come into this. Is there, but you have played, you have had game reps, and so what's the balance there of this is what the organization thought and Coach Alexander, here you are, you're ready, but to not put that pressure on yourself?
You have to apply the pressure.
Okay.
Or you don't grow. If you're not growing and shedding and growing and shedding, you're never going to reach that point. Not a perfection, because we're never going to be there.
Right.
But the pinnacle of where you want to be or where you see yourself or what you want to attract into your life, I mean, you have to continue to have that pressure apply.
Yeah.
Or else you're getting complacent. It doesn't work.
Yeah. How about for you, too? Because you've had the same kind of thought there.
Can you say that question one more time?
Just that this is the year that you know, that they kind of picked for you guys, I guess, if you will. With you know what I mean? That it's like 17. We thought left and right. This is it.
I mean, that's me and Jake from the get-go. I mean, we knew that was going to happen. Like, that was our vision. Like, we're the tackles.
Yeah.
Like, and really, this team this year is going to go based off the line and the tackles. So, we're ready for that pressure. I mean, we're ready for it.
Yeah.
We know if we have a good year, it's probably going to be, not because of us, but we're going to be a big part of it. Yeah. So, ready for the challenge and ready to get this team going.
I've said this before about Sed and Jake, and Sed has been more open about it. And I say it again, I've been really surprised how open they are about how they know this is all on them.
Yeah.
That this is on us. This season is on us. I mean, they're not afraid to say that.
Right.
They know that. It's kind of beaten into them a little bit. Not that it isn't true, but I'm just surprised how accepting they are of it. This is all on us.
Yeah.
So, it really interesting stuff there. And of course, there'll be way more about them and other things related to them in the special section. Again, that's going to be September 3rd. Keep an eye out for that. That's when we're really, you know, that's our full predictions.
Yeah.
The whole nine that we're going to be held to all year.
Then.
No, yeah. I'm on the fence. I've got a few ideas of where I'm
going
to go.
Paul's going 14-2 Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, some might think that. Let's get through some other positions first. All right, so let's talk about tight end. We've got the CJ Uzomah situation, where he seems like a prime IR candidate with a possibility of return.
Yeah.
This year you can bring back two guys off IR return instead of one, so that would have helped the Bengals last year, bringing both Cedric Pierman and William Jackson III back. This year, I think you're more willing to put a guy like CJ on, who maybe it wouldn't be that many weeks.
Right.
But with two, you're not as worried about getting stuck in a situation like you did last year.
Right.
And, you know, you can save a roster spot there. And that's really where this conversation goes.
Yes.
Is Ryan Hewitt.
Yeah.
Oh, what to do with Ryan Hewitt.
Right.
Because this team paid him a lot of money.
Right.
They love what he does. And then they just stopped using him last year.
Right.
And so what do you do? And can it be an answer at tight end?
Yeah, I think he's going to have to be. Because, look, Ken Zampezi, Kenny doesn't like to say a whole lot of anything when it comes to specifics. But he did. Even early in the year last year was like, I'm kind of messing up by not putting Ryan Hewitt in the game, and they never put Ryan Hewitt in the game anyway. He said it again this offseason on multiple occasions that Ryan is too good a player to not be on the field. I think the CJ injury, I think Mason Schreck is not ready for NFL football. I mean, he still doesn't know where to line up.
He's super confused.
And he doesn't know that, like, he should start running when the ball is snapped. He goes, like, before. So I think, you know, he's nice athletic-looking dude, but I think he's a guy, of all the draft picks, that can be cut and, you know, make the practice squad, or if someone picks him up, I don't think they'll be so upset about it. So that's Tyler Eifert. That's Tyler Croft, 1 and 2. And while they both have injury histories and concerns, I think that's where Ryan Hewitt fits in, Paul. I think he, yes, is an H-back and will be in the I formation and all those things, but I think he's shown enough, in my opinion, in my brief time here, that he can run some routes.
He can play tight end.
He can play tight end.
He certainly can be your third tight end.
Yes.
I'd argue he should be ahead of Tyler Croft. Yeah.
So I think that's, I think that when we talk about injuries and things shaking out, I think at least to this point, when we're recording this, has shaken out.
Yeah.
And that's where you roll with those guys. And then Seathan Carter, I know this team really likes him. I think he's your practice squad
He's
guy.
A prime PS candidate.
So if Tyler Eifert gets hurt again or Tyler Croft gets hurt again, Uzama's not ready, Seathan Carter's the, we can bring him up and send them back down.
Yeah, no one's plucking Seathan Carter off the waiver wire. They'd be lucky if they knew who he was.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And when you talk about keeping extra and needing to cut fat somewhere else, this is a spot where in the past, typically, you've kept three tight ends and Ryan Hewitt.
Right.
So you've had technically four tight end H-backs and four running backs. Well, use your versatility to your advantage on the roster.
Right.
You have it in Ryan Hewitt, so let it save you a spot so you can keep a Swiss Army knife like Alex Erickson the potential of Jeff Driskel, the insurance of Jeff Driskel. I love that idea. I'm curious to see if they'll do it.
Yeah.
Because they're not often ones to stretch from tradition around here. It's, Marvin Lewis has the way he likes to do it.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. We've talked so much this offseason in the way they've drafted, in the way Ken Zampezi has envisioned changing this offense, and the way Ryan Hewitt was not used last year. They are changing to the way the rest of the league has gone. It's an open, passing, throw it around, spread it around league. Having four tight end H-backs doesn't make sense anymore.
Right.
If you need to go big, you can bring in extra linemen. You can move Jake Fisher into a fullback position or a tight end type of position and have Andre Smith in at right tackle.
Right.
We've seen him do that plenty of times. There's ways to work around that in the few amount of times it happens during a game where you'd want three or four tight ends in a game, including Ryan Hewitt. Use this to your advantage. That's the way the shape of rosters should be like this. Three tight ends and seven receivers.
Right.
That's what the league is.
Yeah.
And that's what this team wants to be. That's why they drafted speed all over the place.
Right.
They want to spread and use their speed and let Dalton do it. The idea of this looking like the 2009 Bengals handing it off to, you know, to Sed Benson 321 times is just not reality. Or even looking like the second half of 2014 Bengals and letting Ryan Hewitt lead the way for Jeremy Hill 200-plus times is just not what they're going to be.
You mean Joe Mixon's not getting 20 carries a game?
He might. He might. Lovely segue, by the way.
Yeah.
Let's talk running backs. So, like we all knew would happen, Joe Mixon came out and looked like he's looked all of camp and looks great. And, you know, he made three guys miss on the one reception he had. Ran through an arm tackle, shook a couple other dudes, showed great patience on a few of his runs to bust them, ended up averaging 5.2 a carry. And that's with two times where the line just blew up right in his face.
Yeah. It's a Jay Hill worst nightmare.
Yeah, right. Look, you can't watch the game and look at Jeremy Hill and look at Joe Mixon and think that they're on the same level with each other. You just can't.
Nope.
You can't. The question is, will this coaching staff go away from what they always do and go with the guy and back their guy and the veteran and ease the rookie in? I don't know. I've been saying it. I think it's going to happen earlier than you think.
Well,
and the, as the way they talk about Joe Mixon as well, and it's plain to see.
Yeah, it's the I think, and I had to write about this after the game Friday, Paul, because it's really the one thing that could hold him, hold Joe Mixon back in terms of Ken Zampezi, Marvin Lewis, is will Joe Mixon get Andy Dalton killed? And I mean, Jeremy Hill almost kind of got him killed a few times in his career anyway, but that would probably be the biggest concern, right? Pass pro. Do you know what you're doing? Can you pick up a blitz? And that's why I wrote 500 words on that, because even Andy was like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, can Joe Mixon slide across the line in time to pick up a DB blitzing on actually a well-blocked play by said Obwehi and Clint Bowling? And he did. And, you know, it allowed Andy to get the ball off. And you can argue about the throw and all that other stuff. But as of now, though, Paul, I have changed my thought. Because now I've seen it, because that was my thing with this. I have to see it to believe it. I do believe in Joe Mixon is the best running back on this team. However, I can't go all the way to be like Jeremy Hill's just a goal linebacker. I think the leash is probably a little shorter. As I was saying, you know, a month, 2 months ago, what, three games, four games? Maybe it's a half. Maybe it's 3.2 against Baltimore. It's like, you know what? It's Gio and Joe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think Joe's been that good, and the pass pro part of it, that the fact that he truly is picking it up, as they say he has, we've seen it now.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to go full boat. Jeremy's done as a starter, as a guy who's going to get his touches or every other series or every third series, whatever it's going to be. But maybe the leash is a little shorter.
Yeah, I have a hard time envisioning this team watching a preseason of Joe Mixon do what he did on Friday and then be like, rotate, back of a rotation, you know, touch it 10 times when they're trying to win a division game week one,
yeah,
a home division game.
Jeremy Hill comes out, because I thought Jeremy ran well. I mean, said whiffed on a block that led to a loss of yardage, and I think there was another bad block where Jeremy got kind of tripped up early. And yeah, while you could argue Joe Mixon makes those guys miss, I think if Jeremy Hill comes out and runs for 4-1, honestly, I think that number matters. I think, and there's and 0.2 yards, 3.8 to 4.0, that matters to this offense. Ken Zampezi said he's a 4+ carry back. If Joe, even if it looks, if it doesn't look the same, if Jeremy Hill's getting 4.0, he's playing.
Look, here's the thing about that. We talk, oh, the line didn't block for Jeremy, and he's getting hit in the back. What I notice, and granted, this is a super small sample size, and so we'll see as the preseason goes if this feels like a thing that continues. You notice the linemen more with Joe Mixon making good blocks because he sets them up and knows how to find it better. You notice Cedric Obwehi clear in the backside, or Russell Bodine clear in the backside, because Joe Mixon takes his time, is patient, and boom, he's gone right off their back and sees what they're doing.
With that, yeah.
That's why I have a hard time buying the line blows up too much, you know, and blaming it on the line, because that's on the backs to see what the line is doing. Sometimes it can't, you know, when guy blows up and you got the ball and you're hit.
Right.
Yes, that happens all the time. It's happened a lot to Jeremy. Happened to Joe Mixon on Friday. But when you notice more the patient, the Le'Veon Bellness of waiting to see it develop and then using the blocks in front of them, using what they're doing, rather than running into the back or just piling it in because that's where you're supposed to go because I'm supposed to follow my tracks. And you get a guy who in his fourth year is so in his head right now of what coaches have told him to do, follow the right tracks, do the right thing.
Right.
Whereas then they talk about Joe Mixon. He's just so instinctual.
Right.
He just does it, and he finds it.
Are you trying to say the coaches killed Jeremy Hill?
Yes. Coaches killed him. Well, it does. That does happen.
But they talk about it, though. They keep saying, follow your tracks, do this
and do that. And if that's in the back of your head, dude, running back's mental.
Yeah.
It's a mental thing, too. And if you're in your head about what your three-point whatever and you're trying to do right and go where it's supposed to go, You lose some of your instincts. And I think that was part of him his first year. He just went out there and ran.
Yeah.
He went with his instincts. It wasn't in his head. He just went out there and ran. And I think he's lost some of that. And Joe Mixon comes out and you see it.
Yeah.
All right.
Seth Pierman's the back of that room. He just came off NFI. He was dealing with a hamstring. I think if Sed had remained on NFI through week two, week three, and Trey Carson had continued to prove to Darren Simmons he could play special teams, that might have been a thing we would watch.
Yeah.
But unfortunately for Trey Carson, not the same day that Sed Pierman comes off NFI and practices, Trey Carson tweaks an ankle or a foot. We'll learn more about that as we go. We're writing about Trey this week as a guy to kind of pay attention to. But, you know, he would have to beat Sed Pierman out, and I think it was playing up that way or going in that fashion. And then it all turned on a dime early in this week. So as of now, I think Sed's the fourth running back, as he has been.
Yep. All right. It is time for Optimistic Bobby's question of the week as we get closer to wrapping this thing up. So let's bring in the convo with 50 West owner Bobby Slattery. He's got his Optimistic Bengals question of the week.
All right. It is that time again for our Optimistic Bobby question of the week with 50 West owner Bobby Slattery. Bobby, were we optimistic enough in our response to your question last week, or were you not happy with it?
I wasn't happy. I got to be honest. I'm always a happy guy, but it was too much negativity coming out of you guys. It's beginning of preseason. You can't in my world, you don't get upset until the ninth loss of the season, because that's when you pretty much know they're not making the playoffs. Maybe an outside chance, but that's until that ninth loss happens. This is the best time of year. The hope is there. Nothing better than hope.
You're right. There is nothing better than hope. There's plenty of it now. So what is your question this week? And we'll try to be a little more hopeful since we're still shy of the ninth loss.
Here's the deal. You were talking about pacifiers last week. I feel like I want to send you guys some Bengals pacifiers. You guys can suck on those for a little bit until, you know, whenever you start getting a little sassy, just put those in your mouth and remember, hey, the hope is still there.
I'm going to change
the whole tone of this. We're going to get outside of the Bengals. We're going to talk about you guys and how your lives are better as a Bengals fan. So I want to know, here's what I want to know. You spend the whole season following the Bengals. So this year, when they go to the Super Bowl in Minneapolis, what are you guys doing in Minneapolis that week? What are you looking forward to doing the most?
Wow. That is a great question. And we'll get into it here in a minute, but I can tell you right now, it's definitely going to involve buying a new jacket. I'm going to get a nice new jacket as part of the trip to Minneapolis, especially the Bengals in the Super Bowl. You got to have like a fresh parka, I think, when you're heading up there. That's the only
starter jacket. Starter jacket.
We're going to bring back.
Jacket.
Yeah,
bring it back.
Cool half zip starter jacket. We're gonna bring that back with the old stripes waving through. I think Mike Brown still has one in his closet. I could probably go borrow it. Go check that out. All right, Bobby, what's going on? What's going on at 50 West right now?
Oh, we're just loving it. We're closed over the brew pub right now for a private party and people playing volleyball across the street and getting ready to roll cans. Oh, we're building a lab. We're building a ridiculous lab for the brewery, which is super cool.
You're building a lab?
We've always worked with we have your basic lab equipment for beer tests, but we're going big time with it. So I've been talking to scientists for the last 3 weeks, getting all of our stuff together, and it's super cool.
Are there goggles and Bunsen burners?
Well, you know what? Yes, there will be goggles. We actually were talking about replacing them with like Clark Griswold style glasses because we thought that they'd be cooler, but they don't have the blocks on the side. So, and Bunsen burners will be there too. Yeah, all the good stuff.
Yeah, that's what I want. All right, sounds great, Bobby. Appreciate it, and we'll you hang up and listen, and we'll get after your question. So we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Hooday.
All right, Jim. I know you. It is morning right now as we're recording this, so maybe, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do in Minneapolis? What are you going to do in Minneapolis?
Paisley Park a museum yet? Will it be at that point?
The what?
Where Prince died.
Oh, I don't know.
This whole thing.
Can we just go to Prince's house?
Well, I thought I heard they were going to try to turn it into a Graceland type of situation.
Oh, I would do that.
You know, even if it's not, just roll up there.
Well, we just go there and we just try to sneak on the property.
Yeah.
See if there's anybody just hanging around.
You know, I had a college roommate, a good friend of mine, grew up in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. but you know, I don't remember anything about it.
I mean, the Super Bowl basically transforms a town into Super Bowl Town USA.
Right.
Having been there the last few years, I can tell you that every town kind of looks the same when the Super Bowl's there.
Yeah.
It just plops down its crap, and there's this party and that party and the Super Bowl Village and whatever. I try to get away from that. Only thing is, I don't want to go anywhere that involves outdoors in Minneapolis in February. They've got the skyways and the walkways like Indy does. Yeah. I don't see myself leaving those too much.
No.
I would rather go to Minneapolis in the summer.
Yeah. Or good golf.
But like I said, invest in some good winter wear.
Yeah.
Parkas. That type of stuff.
This is super. Mucklucks. Wow, he's so optimistic.
So optimistic.
Yeah.
He wants us to be optimistic, too.
He's trying to pull it out of us.
He is trying.
I got to kneecap you, Bobby.
You can't do it. All right. So speaking of your lack of optimism, what is making you mad this week? What's making you mad?
You know, I think we've...
Are you back in the car? You're about to go back in the car again. I can feel it.
We've advanced as a society.
Oh, before you get started. How about the car spider tweet that was sent to you of the giant tarantula that was on underneath the dude's mirror that he pulled down? That's beyond car spider.
Yeah,
that's
that was
that's
kinda...
just stop the car, pull off to the side, and run. Maybe set the whole thing on fire.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't help but remember the car spider.
Yeah, that was a great
tweet.
Yeah, car spiders really resonated with people.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Very much so.
You know, what I don't understand... Our hand wash only dishes. Like, there's nothing that makes me mad than that kind of like getting either a gift, which has been given, or you buy, like, hey, I like this coffee mug for the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I flip it over, it says hand wash only. Why does that exist still?
Yes.
Kind of like delicate / hand wash laundry, clothes. We have washing machines, we have dishwashers. That drives me crazy because you get the whole thing, the sink, and I don't know about. I mean, I like to let stuff pile up till I get a full like, and then there's the mug that I got to do it with by hand.
Can I tell you about why they have this? For one, I have a coffee mug that is now. This is no statement on views. It's just funny. It's a coffee mug that says Jesus saves on it, and then when you fill it up with coffee, it gets warm, and it says Jesus shaves, and it shows him shaving his beard off with like a little. It's funny, right?
Right.
You know, Jesus shaves. I get it. It's great. Well, I put it in the dishwasher, and because it's hand wash only, Jesus doesn't shave or save anymore. He melts.
It's just a mug.
He just melted, and it's a mug with some bad melting on it. So that's part. I mean, if you've got a mug like that, I mean that's.
Yeah,
I'm willing to hand wash.
That's like a toy, though.
It is, but it's all. But it's also an entertaining coffee mug.
Yeah. No, I don't care. You know what? And dry cleaning. We're past that too.
Yeah,
we should be.
Yeah,
hand wash anything and dry cleaning.
You think dry cleaners should not be a thing?
No,
we should be able to just throw a suit in the wash.
Yes. I don't care. Who wears a suit?
Are you like me?
That's a dumb thing too, by the way.
You can ask my wife, how many times have I had to look up when the dry cleaner opens and how quickly they can turn around on the day of a wedding I got to go to? By the way, every time.
Yes.
I think at least three in a row, I've been like, oh, what time is that dry cleaner? They said if you get it there by 9, they can turn it by 1.
Right.
What time is the wedding? 3? All right. Every single time, because I never take it to the dry cleaner. I have one like really nice suit that I basically just wear to weddings. That's our advantage. We're not suit guys in this job. We're allowed to just be normal dudes.
Yeah, no, hand wash, that's got to go.
Yeah.
I'm tired of it.
All right.
Makes me mad.
Gotta go. Let me tell you why I'm happy. I am happy because baby books that are written to be entertaining for the parents. First of all, they're a little darker at times than I thought they would be. There's a book about hippos' belly buttons, okay? That's fairly entertaining. However, It's all hippos want to go to the beach so they can show off their belly buttons.
Okay.
They call them Bebos in this book, right? So
I'm aware of the Bebo.
Yeah, so it's a Bebo. And you go and they sing their happy, you know, their happy belly button song. Belly, belly button. Ooh, you're so fine. Belly, belly button. I'm so happy. You're right. This is like a very happy thing. Parents singing to their daughter. It's beautiful. Then that's the second to last page. You turn to the last page, it turns like an episode of Game of Thrones where all of a sudden it's the winter time and they all have to put clothes on over top of it and you can't see your belly button anymore. No, never in the winter can you see your belly button. Never in the winter. And then the little hippo baby is at the bottom. The last thing you read is, bye-bye, Bebo. That's how it ends. Why is this so sad? Why are we doing this to children? Why does it have to take such a dark turn? Why can't we just end singing the song and being happy at the Naval Academy? Why must it turn like this?
Hey,
I don't understand.
At least it's not like real life hippos where, like, you know,
they eat people.
Right. We could go
hashtag
there.
Fiona
Think
fatigue.
About the best children's books like Alice in Wonderland and Willy Wonka. That's some scary, dark stuff.
Scary, dark stuff.
Yeah.
But I like at least that dark turn at the end has been entertaining for me as a dad. I really play up the plot
page.
Twist. You know, I really play up the plot twist. So anyway, that's what I'm happy about this week. All right, we've gone too long already, so we're going to get out of here. But remember, we're back next week. We'll dive into the defense and talk to all. There's a lot of interesting decisions there. The week after that will be the week of final cuts, so we will talk about the entire 53 and where we think the cuts are going to come from and all the information there. Remember, Bengals Chiefs, Paul Brown Stadium, Saturday night. Make sure you check Cincinnati.com. We'll have all your coverage throughout the game. And then, of course, in your morning paper, Cincinnati Inquirer. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Bengals Beat podcast. We'll talk to you next week.